yesterday try to call time on us because he didn't like the questions. You can't do that. Counsel.
May it please the Court. My name is Ed Johnson. I work at the Oregon Law Center. My co-counsel is Karen Berkowitz, and she works at Legal Aid Services of Oregon. We represent the plaintiff appellant, Richard McGarry, in this matter. The City of Portland, as part of its code enforcement activities, gives people, homeowners, time to clean up their yard.
Counsel, let me ask you a question about that. You've got a very appealing case in terms of the basic fairness of it. I can't see why the city didn't give them a break. However, what they're supposed to not do under the ADA is deny him a public service or benefit. And I can't figure out what the public service or benefit that he was denied is. Could you identify it?
I start at the point when I look at the ADA, Title II of the ADA, there are no activities of public entities that are carved out. Now, case law has carved out things like employment, perhaps because it's covered by Title I.
Any public service or benefit?
Yes, there is a public service or benefit.
Public service or benefit? It seems to me that what's at stake here is enforcement of the law against him. When the police or other public law enforcement entities enforce the law against John Doe, it probably confers a benefit, or it should confer a benefit, on everybody else in society. But Richard Rowe may benefit from not having John Doe do whatever violation of law he's doing. But I can't see the benefit to John Doe of getting caught and having the law enforced against him.
Right. If I were Mr. McGarry's next-door neighbor, the benefit to me of this would be clear.
Right.
But the benefit that every homeowner gets, even when the nuisance abatement is being enforced against them, is time to clean up. And the city relies on the participation of homeowners. That's why they give them time. They want the homeowners who have been noticed with nuisances to participate in this nuisance abatement, to participate in this code enforcement. And so the benefit is that you have some set amount of time that presumably the city sat down and decided, well, what's a reasonable amount of time for a relatively able-bodied person to clean up their yard? That's the benefit that he was denied, and he was also unable to participate in the way that the city envisioned. And I would point out that what you're getting at is that what happened to him wasn't voluntary. He didn't walk down to the park and say, I would like to participate in this program. It was something that happened to him because he had stuff in his yard. And I would just point out that the case law doesn't add a requirement of voluntariness to Title II.
So anytime there's a time limit, like when they catch you for a taillight violation and they say you don't have to pay this fine if you show proof that you got your taillight fixed in 72 hours or something, the time itself is a public benefit in your theory.
Well, that case that you just suggested doesn't strike me as a very good case, but I think that the law says it's a fact-specific, case-by-case analysis.
Why is that different from this one?
Well, I think that the asking the city to waive public safety issues might more readily pose an undue burden on them and might fundamentally alter the nature of their program, trying to keep pedestrians safe. Now, I can imagine that an accommodation might be appropriate given the severity of the traffic violation, given the nature of the disability. I think it's something that the court has to allow the parties to go through discovery and attempt to prove, but I could see the city easily overcoming that given the facts of the case. I think here it's not clear why more time couldn't be granted.
Let me see if I understand your argument. You're saying that a certain amount of time was given to everybody. Your client was handicapped. Therefore, he needed more time, and they refused to accommodate him, and therefore it was a violation of the Act.
That's the argument. The only thing I would add is that from our perspective, it appeared that the city refused to consider the accommodation request, much less grant it. What happened was during this time that Portland gives homeowners to clean up the yard, he was hospitalized. And also during this time, he asked the city, and a patient advocate from the Cascade AIDS Project asked the city for more time, and their response was simply no. There was no dialogue. There was no questions about, well, how much time do you need, or what about this, or this is why we can't do this.
He wasn't just refusing to do it. He was disabled. Cascade had given him some help, but evidently not enough help. They asked for more time. The city just said, no, your fine is $1,800 or something.
Correct.
And that's just simply under your it's a violation of the Act.
It's a violation of the Act, and I think it's also a violation of the Fair Housing Act. The case Gilligan versus Jamco sets out the pleading requirements for a fair housing claim, and they're basically twofold. One, you have to allege that you're an aggrieved person under the Act, and two, you have to allege that you've been subjected to an alleged discriminatory housing practice. Now, rather circularly, aggrieved person is defined by the Act as someone who's been subject to a discriminatory housing practice. But it shows that interpreting Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 8A2, the court has set the bar fairly low at the pleading stage, and they truly do want a short and plain statement of the facts of the case.
How does he meet the use and enjoy clause of the Housing Act?
Well, use and enjoy, I think, is from property law, and it's my understanding that use and enjoy are broad terms. They're big words that are meant to envision the full bundle of rights that a homeowner has or that a renter might have. And what the city argued and what the district court appeared to hold is that since he was not denied all use and enjoyment of his home, then that he cannot say that this was a reasonably necessary accommodation.
Let's say that you're correct. I think you probably are in your critique of that test. If they throw you out of two of your three rooms and tell you just stay in the third room, they've deprived you of use and enjoyment, even if they haven't deprived you of all of it. My problem is I can't see where he was deprived of any use and enjoyment of his home.
Well,
they didn't throw him out. He could stay there. He could live there. He could use it as he liked. The only thing is he had to conform with generally applicable regulations about mess in his yard.
It's true. They didn't throw him out. And
they didn't condemn it.
Right. And he wasn't excluded. He wasn't excluded.
Improve the area so he could more use it more and enjoy it more, right?
That's correct. But he was not afforded an equal opportunity to use and enjoy his dwelling. And I think there's two ways that he was denied this. First of all, for better or worse, one of the ways that homeowners use and enjoy their property is to store things in the yard. And Mr. McGarry had a bunch of stuff in his yard. We don't have a factual record in front of us, but there are facts in this case.
But he's not disputing that. He's not saying that's an unreasonable requirement to clean up your yard.
Right. And as far as I know, he's not challenging that he was in violation of the ordinance. But by denying him more time to clean up, he wasn't able to do what a non-disabled homeowner was able to do. Perhaps move this stuff into a shed. Some of it was firewood that he used to heat his home. You know, he could have moved it into the garage or gotten a friend to store it, but because of his hospitalization, he was denied that use and enjoyment that is clearly in connection with his dwelling. And as we argued in our briefs, I think there's another way that he was denied an equal opportunity to use and enjoy the dwelling, and that has to do with the fact that this lien was satisfied for $1,800, and so he literally lost the use, and it wasn't two rooms out of three like your hypothetical, but he lost $1,800 in equity that he could have, but for his disability, used and enjoyed.
Do you have any case involving, this amounted to really a fine, is that right? Any case that involves a fine for failure to do something that involved someone who was handicapped?
I think that the California mobile home case is an interesting case. It's not exactly on point, but it shows how this court has analyzed these problems in the past. California Mobile Home 1. That case involved a fine of $1.50 a day.
Well, it wasn't a fine. It was a charge, and it was interfering with access from by a caregiver. Right. Quite different from this, isn't
it? It is different. And the city has pointed out that this wasn't exactly a fine either. This was the cost of cleanup, and it ended up being a lien on his house. So I think that the charges for the nurse, for the daughter of the tenant in California Mobile Home 1 and 2, are similar. I also think that the Turning Point versus Caldwell case is on point with regard to your question. That's a case where the court, I believe it went through trial, was analyzing the cost to this homeless shelter of getting an annual special use permit. And so that was a fee that, or a fine or a cost that would apply to anyone who went over the normal occupancy restrictions. That's an example of a fine that applies to everyone equally, but could be subject to the considerations of reasonable accommodation.
When a person is blind.
Right. The Crowder case is also an interesting case along these lines. That's the case where the state of Hawaii, as part of their rabies abatement effort, put a 120-day quarantine on all dogs coming into the state of Hawaii. And again, that's a non-voluntary rule, a regulation of the state that every single person is subjected to. And the court found, without finding whether the particular request was reasonable or not, found that this is the kind of thing where the state has to at least enter into the dialogue and the consideration of reasonable accommodation and reasonable modification.
These cases that you've mentioned, it strikes me that they involve a different sort of use and enjoyment. California Mobile Home is an interesting case, as you say, because it deals with the financial imposition. But the difference there is, there's some language in the case. The challenged fee rule must, like the rules described above, have the potential to deny persons an equal opportunity to use and enjoy a dwelling because of their handicap. In that case, without paying the parking fee for guests, the woman with the respiratory disease just couldn't live there. She'd be at risk of dying from not getting enough air. So she really couldn't live in her own house without this financial imposition on her. But plaintiff here, McGarry, can. It's just he's got a mess in his yard and he's in too bad shape physically to clean it up himself.
I agree that the nature of the use and enjoyment is different. Although California Mobile Home 2 was interesting because what happened by the time this case went through a bench trial and got back up to this court, it appeared that the plaintiff there was unable to produce any evidence about the fact that this may have been necessary to afford her an equal opportunity to use and enjoy the property. And the court was looking at things like, well, the nurse could have parked off-site or the nurse could have paid for it. And apparently there was no evidence produced at trial to meet that element. And we believe that Mr. McGarry can show that his use and enjoyment, not all of it, but his equal opportunity to use and enjoy his property was in fact infringed upon by the city's failure to consider, much less grant, a reasonable accommodation in this case. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the Court. I'm Tracy Reeve, appearing on behalf of Defendant City of Portland.
Would you please speak up?
I'm sorry, and I apologize for snuffling through this. I have a bad cold this morning.
It's hard for me to hear you. You talk kind of fast.
Okay, I'll slow down.
Maybe if you pull the mic just a little bit, that might help.
As I was rereading the materials to get ready for this argument, I thought what I would like to do this morning is to try to bring things into a little bit sharper focus. I think it's critically important for the court to determine exactly what rule an accommodation is being requested for. That rule in this case is contained in the Portland City Code provision that requires property owners not to have accumulations of litter, glass, scrap materials, junk, combustible materials, etc., on their property. That's the rule of law at issue in this case. The plaintiff in this case has never alleged or contended that his disability requires him to have piles of trash, et cetera, in his yard. He's never contended that he needs to have piles.
Well, the appeal of the case, in fairness, the reason why I suspect most neutral readers would say, gee, I wonder why they didn't just give him a break, is if you have some kind of physical problem, it can be real hard to pick up things that you put down in your own yard when you're in better physical shape.
That certainly may be true. That's not alleged in the complaint. There's nothing in the complaint that alleges that the violation arose out of his disability. The allegations are that his failure, once that he was in violation of this ordinance, that he was not able to, within a set period of time, remedy the violation. There's no allegation in the complaint that the accumulation of trash and debris was necessary for his disability, that he needed to.
He didn't. All he said was, I was unable to do it within the time frame allotted me. I had people willing to help me. Just give me some more time. And the response was, no.
In fact, he was given some more time, and that's reflected in the record. He wasn't given as much more time as he wanted.
But he was willing to remove it. He didn't say, I have a right to enjoy my trash. He said, I just can't get rid of it in this time period. And he wasn't given additional time, even though Cascade indicated its willingness to come in and help him.
Well, certainly those are the allegations of the complaint, which the court obviously has to accept for purposes of this decision. But I think the record does show, even in the allegations of the complaint, that the plaintiff was given some extra time. I guess my point is that there's no allegation that the original violation of the ordinance, that the accumulation of trash and debris in his yard, was occasioned by his disability or necessary to his disability or necessary for him to use and enjoy his home. In other words, what the court has to look at is, what's the rule of law? Does that rule of law need to be bent? Does that rule of law need to be adjusted for somebody who has a disability, either for them to enjoy the government programs, practices, or to have reasonable use and enjoyment of their home? The situation here, the plaintiff does not contest he was in violation of the ordinance, and he does not contend, hey, I need to have trash and debris in my yard. I can't reasonably use and enjoy my yard without trash and debris in it. And he doesn't allege, somehow because I have AIDS, that disability, I need to have trash and debris in my yard. What he alleges is, once I was in violation of that ordinance, and there's no allegation that the violation of the ordinance, he doesn't say, hey, city, I need to have trash and debris in my yard. He doesn't contest that. He doesn't say he needs a reasonable accommodation to that rule.
The distinction is all that. I'm thinking, as you talk, I'm thinking, how does debris get in my yard? Well, you put something down, you're working on it, and then you get interrupted by a phone call, and you go inside for the phone call, and then something else comes up, and you forget to remove what you put down. Now what was a useful item that you were working on has just become debris. You have a canoe. You put your canoe down, then your back goes out or something. You can't pick the canoe up. It has changed from your recreational equipment to debris. And as these things pile up, it looks trashier and trashier.
I agree that it's conceivable that the plaintiff could allege, or a plaintiff could allege, that their disability, that they needed accommodation from the rule itself because of a disability. That has not been alleged here.
So where does that go, though? You're saying that once someone has created a condition that the city has lawful authority to cause them to remove, the city has no obligation to accommodate someone who is willing to remove it but is physically unable to do it within a certain time frame. You say that unless he were to attack and be a bad citizen, in effect, and say, you can't even prevent me from accumulating the trash.
I'm saying that
out of luck.
The purpose of the Fair Housing Act and the purpose of the Americans with Disabilities Act, in the particulars that are applicable here.
Excuse me, you're speaking to yourself.
I'm sorry. Are to level the playing field. They're not to say that someone can violate a law for reasons unrelated to their disability, and then say, I'm in violation of this law, but because of my disability, it's more difficult for me to comply.
Let's take that premise. the fact, as I understand it, what's alleged here is that, yes, he accumulated debris, but he violated the law by not removing it in time. In other words, he had the trash. If he had immediately removed it, he would have triggered the removal order, but there would have been no imposition of any sanction if he had removed it within a certain time frame. It's the failure to remove within a certain time frame that triggers the sanction. So isn't there, are there two aspects to the violation? Why would he have to allege that or say, I'm entitled to violate the law? That is, I'm entitled to have, not only create, but keep trash on my yard. That would be
I think the code provision
hard to buy.
Prohibits maintaining nuisances on your property.
Right.
The enforcement of that is triggered once someone does not, once they're noticed and they don't remove it. But the violation of the ordinance is having the nuisance condition on the property.
Having and maintaining. So is the nature of the law such that if an inspector goes by and sees the condition of my yard, and in the inspector's opinion that constitutes a nuisance under the ordinance, that there's, that's the be-all and end-all of it, that's the, I am now in violation of the law?
I would argue that, yes, you're now in violation of the law, but then you're entitled to certain process
right.
before that the city would actually take the action of cleaning it up themselves.
Right. And
but you're already in violation
it?
Of the law.
Right. But isn't that what's at issue here? It's the second step.
Well, for example, I have some examples. If a disabled individual, for reasons unrelated to their disability, left an inoperative pickup truck parked on a street for over the amount of time that inoperative vehicles are allowed to be parked on streets.
Mm-hmm.
And if the city came and posted a notice that said, either get this operative within 3 days or tow it, or we'll come and tow it, could a disabled individual come in and say, well, I really do want to get it running, but due to my health, it's going to take me longer. It's going to take me some unspecified period of time to work on that truck.
Well, maybe not, or maybe so, but isn't that the purpose, to have some question of reasonable accommodation? If it turns out that the demand by the disabled person, as you say, is unreasonable, then that's the city's defense. All we're talking about here is there some obligation on the city to take a look at the individualized circumstances of someone who's disabled and let that kind of dialogue you're talking about, which is quite reasonable. I don't think they're disputing, nor would I be inclined to dispute, that the city has to leave junk cars on the streets just because the owner of the car happens to be disabled. But if it's a difference between a day because the guy's in the hospital getting a blood transfusion, or a month, there's a range of variables there that the ADA seems designed to take care of.
I guess the point is that what the ADA is saying is this law, because of an individual's disability, is it more difficult for them to comply with the law such that they can't either use and enjoy their property, well, in the FHA context, or that they're not receiving the same benefits of government services? If someone alleges that because of their disability they can't comply with the law, then the city has an obligation to say, can we reasonably accommodate that? If someone violates the law for reasons unrelated to their disability and then says, oh, because of my disability, I need extra time to come in compliance, my point is, I don't think disabled individuals are entitled to violate laws for reasons unrelated to their disability.
But I don't get. I keep coming back to the how gossamer that distinction is. I'm thinking, how does trash accumulate in somebody's yard? Well, how could it accumulate in mine? I put the trash out, and once a week I have to drive it to the dump. And if on my driving to the dump day my pickup truck won't start, I've got to wait maybe for it to warm up to zero so that my truck will start before I can take it to the dump. And maybe it takes 3 weeks before it warms up and my truck will start. Now I've got an accumulation of trash in the yard. Now, if my back goes out and I can't take the trash for another 2 weeks, then I've got a lot of trash piling up to the point where if I lived in a more urban sort of setting, somebody would probably notice. There isn't any difference between putting it down and picking it up. It's not like the disability doesn't make them put it down. So,
well,
so the disability has no relevance. There's no distinction between the putting it down and picking it up. It just gradually turns from ordinary functions of living into a trash-filled yard because of his disability.
Were that alleged, that might be true. That's not what's alleged in the complaint.
I think it's the nature
though.
Of debris in your yard. It just ordinary living causes things to be put down, and then ordinary neatness causes things to be picked up.
So you would, what you're saying, you'd have us draw a distinction here, as I understand it, that the city doesn't want us to have a rule that says disabled people can break the law and then have some exemption on compliance with remedial aspects unless the breaking the law in the first instance was attributable to the disability.
Correct.
Okay, so what if, in Judge Kleinfeld's discussion, the reason that the accumulation of debris was because he was unable to lift, to carry, to move, whatever, and therefore it built up. He was unable in a normal course of his life, and therefore the accumulation itself was attributable to his disability. Then would the city have an accommodation to accommodate him on the remedial removal of it?
I think it would be a much closer question, but I still think that where what's going on is a generally applicable law where there's no allegation that this individual could not afford to hire someone. There are very many people who, when they're served with some kind of a notice, can't do the work themselves. There are elderly people who aren't disabled, but they're not capable of it. Often when these things happen, people hire someone to come do it.
Well, are you saying that if the person is handicapped but can afford to hire someone, then the law, no accommodation is necessary? Wouldn't that almost exclude everybody? That if you just say, well, if you can afford to hire someone to come in, then we don't have to accommodate you.
Generally applicable nuisance laws are not the types of laws that the courts have said are exempt from compliance. And even some of the zoning cases that are cited have said, we'll give you this special zoning regulation, but if you have concerns about trash and that kind of thing because of the, for instance, increased occupancy in some of the FHA cases where they give a variance from a zoning regulation to allow greater occupancy, where people have expressed concerns, well, we're going to have a buildup with that many people there of trash and debris and that kind of thing. What the court said is that can be addressed through ordinary nuisance law. Nuisance law and obligations to maintain property are not the kinds of obligations that are required to be accommodated unless there's something that rises to the level of interfering with somebody's use and enjoyment. But here, the city doesn't say, you have to clean this up yourself. The city says, as a property owner, you have an obligation not to have a nuisance condition on your property. And that obligation attaches regardless of whether someone has a disability or not. The point is that there are many people who aren't disabled who still, to comply with the laws, generally the laws regulating fire safety, the laws regulating electrical codes, those are there for public safety. This is a public safety case. And it's not a defense to complying with those regulations that someone is disabled and cannot do the work themselves.
Let me ask, when I was questioning your adversary, I asked him, with relevance to one of the statutes, what public benefit is the plaintiff being deprived of? And with respect to the other statute, what use and enjoyment of his home is he being deprived of? You have focused on other areas of your case. Are there weaknesses or incompleteness to the arguments on public benefit and use and enjoyment that I've overlooked so that you need these other areas of the case you're focusing on?
No, not at all. And I think that the public benefit piece kind of dovetails with what I was trying to say. Plaintiff doesn't say that he was denied any services of the city of Portland. Essentially what's alleged is he acknowledges that his house was in a condition, his property was in a condition that was in violation of the city's ordinance. The city then, in a law enforcement capacity, exercise of police power, went in and abated that nuisance. plaintiff wasn't denied any services or public programs of the city. Instead, the city was acting in a law enforcement capacity to enforce public safety. And in that context, when someone violates a law, not for reasons related to their disability, or even if their disability makes it more difficult for them to comply, they're not being denied a public benefit or service. If anything, his yard was cleaned up. And with regard to the use and enjoyment.
Can I just, before you leave that then, it says denied the benefits of the services, programs, or activities of a public entity. So whether it's an activity or a benefit, does the city extend time to comply? Has the discretion which it dispenses?
At oral argument, the district court judge asked plaintiffs if there was any allegation, factual allegation, that the city had extended the time to others and not to Mr. McGarry, and they responded no. So I don't think that's an issue in this case.
Why would that not be? Does the city have that capability? It extended it in this case, didn't it?
Yes, the city does, but there's no allegation that Mr. McGarry was treated differently than other homeowners, or that other homeowners were getting extensions and he wasn't.
Well, I'm not sure that's the relevant universe. What if he's the only one who's disabled in the community?
The city would have the discretion, if it chose to extend the time for a cleanup period. Mm-hmm. There's no allegation that the city has done so in other cases and not done so in this case.
It says by reason of his disability. Well, okay.
Incidentally, is there anything that you can enlighten us with on why the city didn't give him a break? It's just incomprehensible to me. I mean, regardless of how the law comes out.
When I, this is not in the record, but when I spoke with the inspector in this case, what he said is that he had been told it would be done by X time, he had been told it would be done by X time, he had been told it would be done by X time. When he went back to the property, the condition was not materially improving, and he didn't see any basis to believe that it would continue to, that there would be any material improvement in the condition of the property.
Even though the man was in the hospital and Cascade was coming in saying, we'll help him, give us time.
Well, Cascade came in over a month before this house was abated. It was about 2 months from the time that the cleanup order was
issued. The guy has AIDS.
Until it was abated.
Is that why the AIDS help group was there?
Yes.
And they did help some, but not enough. But they had said, give us some more time. He's in the hospital with meningitis over a prolonged period of time. I guess I had the same question. It's off the record, but of Judge Kleinfeld.
Off the record.
You can get out of your bed to go to the bathroom.
Well, the other thing that the inspector said to me is that very often homes that get into this condition are in that condition because the property owner is not able to do the cleanup, and that if, you know, whether it's an elderly person, whether it's an alcoholic, whether it's somebody who has another incapacity, that's how houses get into these conditions, and so that if after X period of time it's not done, the city goes in and sometimes people are glad that they come in and do it. So,
but in that process, I'd just like to ask one question. The ADA, and I think counsel for the plaintiff emphasizes at the beginning that there wasn't even an effort to engage in a dialogue. It was, I mean, you're saying the inspector did make some extensions of time, but was there any effort to sit down with Cascade or with anybody else to say, how can we deal with this individual as opposed to
meeting
with alcoholics and everybody else?
I honestly cannot answer that
question. It's not in the record. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kendra.
I think I just have one point unless there are further questions.
I'm still a little worried. It's appealing as it is, when I think about the benefits of the city program, I'm thinking McGarry would be so happy to be deprived of the benefits of the city program. No inspector should come around, no orders, no accommodations, no nothing. Just leave him alone.
And I think that's the city's argument that the district court, I'm not sure that's what the district court wrote, but I think that's what the district court found appealing, was that he wasn't really complaining about being excluded, but he was complaining about being included. And I would just say that there's no distinction in the act itself. And, in fact, the case law applies to all sorts of involuntary benefits and participation of services, activities, and programs. For example, dog quarantines, prison administration, arrest, parole decisions. I mean, there's a whole slew of situations where things are being done to people, but the ADA isn't completely off the charts. So with regard to the benefit, it's a slippery idea, but there is this participation that the city of Portland envisions homeowners engaging in with regard to nuisance abatement. And, you know, if you're the one who's got the messy yard, you probably would rather that the city of Portland had not included you in this. But you do have time, and that's a benefit of this program. And it's only through discovery that we'll know how that works, because it doesn't appear to be written down how much time people have. But they presumably give everyone the same amount of time, and it's based on how long they think it'll take people to clean up their yard. So that there is participation and there is a benefit there. Regarding the other claim in the Fair Housing Act, the use and enjoyment, again, the question at this stage is whether through the course of discovery, Mr. McGarry will be able to produce any set of facts in support of his claims that will entitle him to relief. And we think that he can, there's many possible sets of facts that will show that he was not afforded equal opportunity to use and enjoy his dwelling.
Let me ask you about something. I want to hear more about that, but I'm wondering if this isn't a public safety as well as an aesthetic imposition. Because if you have a lot of trash in your yard and a lot of debris in your yard, the trash attracts rats and the debris gives them a place to make dens.
Sure, and it could be a fire hazard. I mean, you could have hazardous waste in your yard. I mean, I think all that is going to go to whether or not the request was reasonable to begin with, and whether or not we're...
That'll be brought out at trial.
That'll be brought out through the discovery process and at trial. And so, you know, the city's going to presumably, if we're lucky enough to have the opportunity, the city's going to have the opportunity to raise defenses and say this was not a reasonable request. This was a public safety issue. I mean, the Crowder case is interesting. I mean, trying to keep rabies off the islands of Hawaii is clearly a public safety, public health issue. And the court said you have to enter into the dialogue and look at the request. But I would assume that the bar is pretty high when you're asking a state to change their rules and modify and accommodate something as important as quarantining animals to prevent rabies. But nonetheless, there might be reasonable accommodations and reasonable modifications that don't infringe upon or fundamentally alter the government's interest. So the use and enjoy, the only point I wanted to make about that is that the city and the district court seem to indicate that a person need to be completely denied use and enjoyment. And I think that the phrase, an equal opportunity, is the key phrase here. And
let's assume that proposition is rejected. Still, all I can tell that you've given us on use and enjoy is use and enjoyment of the money. And I'm thinking, well, gee, when you can't put your trash in your pickup truck, you try to hire a trash service or figure out some way of hiring somebody to do it for you. And that's not deprivation of the use and enjoyment of your house, just of the money that you have to spend.
Well, you know, it may be through discovery that there are other uses and enjoyments that come up, but the two that I know of that are likely are both the $1,800 in equity and his right to use and enjoy that, and this concept that people use and enjoy their property by putting things in their yard, and that but for his disability and the city's failure to consider...
He has the misfortune of living in a settled area in Oregon instead of in the woods in Alaska. He can't put stuff down in his yard the same way.
Well, there obviously he can't, but the question is whether or not the law envisions the possibility that he might ask for more time as an accommodation, and it's our position that he can. That is a proper request.
Is there any other use and enjoyment that you can think of that could be pleaded here besides use and enjoyment of the $1,800 and use and enjoyment of being able to put debris down in his yard?
I think those are the two that I've been able to think about over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, the fact that it involves his yard is not a critical distinction. I mean, there's all sorts of accommodations that don't occur indoors, inside. I mean, we're not saying the yard is the dwelling, but we believe that he was not afforded an equal opportunity to use and enjoy his dwelling because of the city's failure to accommodate in both of those ways. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you for the argument.
Thank you both.
Very helpful. We'll recess for 10 minutes.